OJ, go home, would you? Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted. And, of course, on the landing page, Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. All previous episodes of whatever this is, just sitting there for you to peruse and to click on and to enjoy. I am Jim Toronto, and we will be talking about a few things today. I might as well get right to it here, because I promised... Uh-oh, I may have hit something. The whole phone looks crazy. Is he... Mick, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. The phone just looked very strange.
Sorry.
Oh, there you go. You did nothing. I hit some button, and there was more print on the phone dial there than I ever saw in my life.
Okay.
But anyway, I wanted to get started because not only have I promised over the last 2 weeks to talk about what we had agreed on talking about.
Yeah.
And we moved off to other topics, which I think were fun and worthy, and so I didn't mind doing that. And I promise that this week I'm going to get to it. I've actually had some emails from people saying, what are you planning on talking about? And get to it.
Stay on message, Mr. Trump.
Stay on message. I had Anthony Scaramucci all set to go to keep me to stay on message, then he quit.
Well, that screwed it up, yeah.
Yeah. But then, you know, and actually what's ironic about this is that I certainly, the topic I wanted to talk about was relevant to what was sort of going on with me, but I just had something occur that really makes it even more relevant. So actually, even though the delay of a couple of weeks was not intentional, it may actually turn out to be best.
A benefit.
I've actually got more now to add to the story. So,
like falling into a bucket of poop and having a quarter stuck in your teeth.
Well, I don't know what that means, but if that's what you think, then
it's all good.
Yeah, I mean, anytime poop and money is concerned, how could you go wrong? So I don't know what that meant. And once again, as I've said many times with all of my radio stuff, there's things that happen here that you may not understand, but there are so many layers to this show that someday someone may decipher what you just said.
Sure.
And say, wow, that was insightful. As we stand here in 2017, I looked at Kevin, he looked at me, and we both didn't know what the hell you were talking about.
Someday someone who hears this in the broadcast museum, they'll be going, now I got it.
Or, how the hell did this get in there? But of course, I am somewhat sidetracked, but I promise it'll be very brief. And once again, be my Anthony Scaramucci and keep me on message, at least for 11 days.
Yes, Mr. President.
So I just have to mention this because it has been something of a reoccurring topic that we've talked about here. And we actually hatched a fun and interesting idea on the web. Webcast podcast here, so I think it's worth mentioning very briefly. Sadly, soda, stop. What was it? Stop our drinking assault.
Right.
Our protest group to stop the Cook County so-called pop tax, a tax on sweetened beverages, which was proposed to add a penny for every ounce of a pop kind of, you know, soda pop beverage, a sweetened beverage, adding that much to the price. And for a while, it was actually tabled, and it looked like that was sort of going to go away. But unfortunately, a court case did not hold up. And so when this airs, well, officially gets posted, the Cook County area will have now been inflicted, and I use that word deliberately, inflicted with this pop tax. And it's clearly a money grab. And as I said, it hits home to me because even though I've never been a big pop drinker for the last 6 months, I certainly discovered a certain pop brand, Sprecher's, and became a pop fan. And thankfully, I lined my my basement stairs with four packs of Sprecher's before this tax went into place. Now I just hope that you know, it doesn't go bad. Does pop go bad?
No, not really. Yeah. Nothing problem with that.
Well, that's good. But anyway, so Mick and I devised. I was very upset, and we devised off the spur of the moment a protest in
a
which
grassroots movement that failed,
as most do. everybody gets very excited, and right. Everybody pats each other on the back, and there's a lot of spirit and
yeah.
energy. But just ask Bernie Sanders where grassroots movements go.
Yep.
So, third out of three. Okay. And so Soda was going to. I was going to go down to the Cook County Board, Cook County Building, dressed as a bottle of pop. And with my sign saying "Soda, stop our drinking assault," and then the highlight of our protest was going to be the Chicago Pop Party, a takeoff on the Boston Tea Party, and I was going to throw cases of pop into the Chicago River and carbonate the Chicago River in defiance and protest of this pop tax. But apparently, not only did I not do that, but the tax did pass. Now we will see. It is constitutional. But I'm just thinking that when this thing gets into effect, I think there's two things going to happen. Either Cook County is going to see a lowering because people are going to cross the border,
right, just to get their pop.
To get their pop, or I think that when people who don't and just start to buy pop see what this tax does, adding a penny per ounce, and once again that means a six pack, you know, 6 times 12, that's 72 extra cents on your six pack of pop, and just. Do the multiplications if you buy a 24-pack or a 12-pack. So this can add up, and I think that people are going to start to rebel. And perhaps, just so you know, Mick, I'm not throwing out the soda signs.
Okay, keep your costume, too.
Yes, I keep my costume, and I'm going to keep all my pop that I can still throw. In fact, it might actually be better because this happens in 6 months. By then, my other... the pop that I haven't drank may have spoiled and may not have much fizz anymore. So then I wouldn't mind throwing it in.
Okay, we can go with that.
Because I think there's going to be a rebellion as people begin to see the reality of this. Right now, I think it was just kind of something that sort of was, oh, okay, whatever. But when they start to buy pop and they start to say, whoa, wait a minute, a can of pop. I mean, I'm thinking, too, I would assume if I go to a pop machine, that tax has to be on there, right?
I would think so. They probably have to up the price of those, too, yeah.
Yeah, so, and as we all know, a can of pop in a pop machine is already ridiculously overpriced.
Sure.
So that $2 can of pop is now going to cost close to $2.50, probably. But anyway, I just wanted to say that, unfortunately, despite our efforts, which really were nothing more than joking and talking, that's as far as our grassroots effort got.
It was pipe dreams.
It was pipe dreams, but it was good radio.
Sure.
And that's all I'm really worried about, because at the end of the day, I'm not really all that concerned. Although I can say, if I do need some Sprecher's, I'm not going to say where you live, but all I can say is you don't live in Cook County.
I'm in DuPage County, so I can run that stuff out to you. I can smuggle it through.
You're going to be like the Godfather. You know, you're going to be running pop over the state lines.
Instead of molasses out of Canada. Yeah.
Oh, we made millions. Your father, too. you're gonna be my my Mo. No, not Mo Green. You're going to be
the old guy, right?
Yeah. What's his name? Oh, my God.
Lee Strasberg.
Yeah, I know the actor. Come on.
He was dying of a heart attack.
Kevin, do you
years.
Know from The Godfather? He's
no.
never seen The Godfather.
I've seen bits and pieces.
Oh. See, I don't even want to start to talk to Kevin about what he knows and what he doesn't know. Once again, Kevin, I love you, but God, I hate everything you stand for. And oh, come on.
Let me look it up online. Hang on.
This is ridiculous.
Hang on, let me look it up.
I could do all his lines.
Hang on.
Michael, we're bigger than
U.S. Here we are.
US...
Hyman Roth.
Hyman Roth, of course.
Hyman Roth ran the molasses with Corleone.
With Corleone. Made millions. Your father, too.
Yeah.
Michael, we're bigger than U.S. Steel. For the first time, we've got a government who understands business. I'm going to, when I leave, when I die, hopefully from years from now, I'm going to leave part of the Tropicana to the Dead End Boys. Now, eat your cake. But that's how you're going to be. You're going to be my Hyman Roth.
There you go. We're going to run it through.
We're going to run it over the Cook County. We're going to go on North Avenue. Like, where is the line? Is it like 83 or York Road? Like, where is it on North Avenue? Like, where does, like, Cook County and DuPage?
DuPage County kicks in.
Yeah, is it like Northlake?
It pretty much is. Well, Stone Park, I'm trying to think. Bellwood and...
Well, if I'm on North Avenue and I'm driving down north...
Okay, you got to go down North Avenue to... You got to go past Melrose Park. You really have to... I believe Northlake is still Cook County.
Yeah, so I'm thinking...
So right after Northlake is Elmhurst, and then we're good.
So do you think it's like where the Portillo's is on North Avenue?
Yeah, probably around there. Yeah.
All right. Well, then I'll just meet you in the parking lot.
We'll meet in the back lot. We'll do our deals that way.
Yeah. There's a lot of industrial parks there.
Sure. Yeah. We can be inconspicuous.
Yeah. It actually would feel like that. All of a sudden, the trunk opens.
I feel like a crack dealer.
Yeah.
You know.
Mix unloading four packs.
No, we have people doing that. We have big cases.
Yeah.
You know, where you and I are just sitting over the corner smoking cigars, and there's these thugs that are unloading these cases of pop from my car into yours.
Yeah, we'll get Joe Pesci to stop a Sprecher's pop truck,
right?
And hijack it.
Hijack it, exactly. It's like an ATM.
Yeah, like Goodfellas. You don't know who did this, but don't forget, we know who you are.
Right.
So yeah, I'm very disappointed in the pop tax, but I do believe that with time, the people's voice will be heard. So let me just say one more time: soda, soda. Soda.
That's it.
All right. So now, here's the topic that some have been waiting for 2 weeks. And hopefully it lives up to the hype.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. Hey, if it doesn't, I'll just edit it out. We'll be talking. The podcast will be 5 minutes long. Oops.
Sure, no problem.
Yeah, so here we go. So, I've been talking about this on and off for a while, actually for the last couple of years, and when I began to do some fill-in work here at WGN, I talked about it because it was actually happening a lot, and thankfully it slowed down, and now it's kind of picked up again. I have always been very healthy in my entire life. I probably went to a doctor 2 times in my life. I didn't even have a regular doctor for decades. And in the last 2 years,
I've been like a walking mass unit.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, all of a sudden, Blue Cross Blue Shield says, who's this guy?
Where'd he come from? Are we sure this is real?
Yeah, is this a real person? Because every week, there's another claim coming in for another ailment. And I've gotten so many over the last couple of years, and this is not even a joke. I'm getting now solicitations both on the phone and in the mail, and even on my email from like hospice and home care services.
Well, they know you're getting up in years.
Yeah, they must think I'm like 80 because they're looking at they're probably getting access to some kind of my bills and saying, well, this guy has to be 80 and he has to be close to death. Because
you're getting some Viagra samples in the mail.
Viagra? I'm getting, do you need, you know, incontinence?
Because it depends. Like
colostomy bags. Yeah, they're giving me, whatever is the app of like Tinder.
Right.
For home care workers.
You're on it.
That's what I'm getting now. I'm swiping left. No, I don't want her. No, I don't want him. Oh, he looks nice. Oh, she looks good. I've got 7 matches for a home caregiver. Hopefully they live another 30 years and they can come over. But I've had a series of nothing overtly serious. Nothing life-threatening, but yet things that need to be taken care of so that they will not progress. And it's just been kind of crazy in that I've been so unattentive to, like, not unattentive to my health, but I've never really been the guy that goes to the doctor.
Right, you just haven't had the need.
And now, I mean, I know, this is, and I'm not even exaggerating, I know by heart the group number and the identification number on my Blue Cross Blue Shield card.
On your insurance card,
yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And I know how to spell all my medications, and I know how to, and I know how many milligrams I'm taking. It's ridiculous.
You don't even need the medic ID bracelet.
No.
It's all in your head.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. So what I've, and I won't go into everything, but it's been, I had something, it's been a series of interesting little maladies. And I guess I should just go into a little, just to give a little credence to what the overall topic is. So 2 years ago, I woke up and I lost almost 90% of my hearing in my left ear.
Right.
Nobody knows why. It's called sudden hearing loss. They're not sure why it happens, but it does. And I wound up getting, ultimately, what healed me in 2 or 3 weeks was I had 2 shots of steroids into my eardrum. And that did it. Plus, I was on a regimen of steroids. Then after that, I had a vein in my eye pop. And for the last 2 years, I'm not trying to be gross, I'm just telling you the truth. For the last 2 years, every 8 weeks or so, I get an eye injection. Oh, now
sounds like fun.
Yeah, the funny thing is, it sounds a lot worse than it is. It's not. I don't look forward to it, but believe me, it's not as bad as it is or it sounds. But anything around the eye certainly sounds weird. Then I seriously injured my Achilles tendon.
And you fell off that stage.
Fell off a stage during a show on opening night, during a play, which resulted in 2 weeks in a cast, 4 weeks in a boot, and 2 months of physical therapy, and I'm still working through that. I had an abscess in my gums, which I had to get taken care of. Then everything kind of slowed down. And then over the last 4 months, I went for a physical. And once again, nothing terrible. My numbers weren't great. They weren't horrible. So I've been working on those, which is good. But, and I'm not trying to get too, into this, but there were microscopic blood cells in a urine sample.
Right. Nothing that you could see, but something that they found.
I have no idea. I had no idea. I never have any pain in my kidneys. I've never seen any blood in my urine. But apparently it's microscopic. So over the last 2 months, to find the source of this, and thankfully there's nothing serious. In fact, as I said, literally today, I went to a kidney doctor just now to see if he could figure it out, because they first went to my bladder to make sure that everything was good in my bladder, no tumors or no leaking veins.
Right, no problems there.
And, I had to take a CT scan first. From the outside, the bladder was fine. Then they had to go inside. Okay, how do we put this delicately? You know how they...
They had to go up your shrink-schwang
to
check it out.
That's how you check out the bladder.
By the way, I like to use clinical terms like shrink-schwang.
Yeah, I don't know. That's another one that we'll look up one day and figure out what that meant.
Your shrink-schwang. They had to go up there, and they had to go up to your bladder.
Yeah, so let's recap. First of all, 2 shots in the ear, shots in the eye,
abscess.
Abscess. I've also had
my old radio name was Abscess.
Abscess. Yeah, I've got a 6-pack of abscesses. I also had a root canal.
Okay.
And then I had the Achilles tendon. So now I had this thing called a cystoscopy, which is the going into the bladder, going through that famous of all orifices,
the shrink-schwang.
Yeah, which of course had me. Now I know how the gals feel. Gals out there,
Yeah.
I know when you always talk about going to the gynecologist and you're always kind of, you know, making these faces or making these little comments to each other, and we men have no idea, you know, why that's weird or why you guys make a big deal about it, because we don't really have the equivalent of a, you know, of a gynecological exam, except we certainly do have the you know, the finger and the cough test for the hernia, you know, turn your head and cough. And we do have the prostate test, which I've had as well. Oh, hello, Doc.
Same here.
Moon River. and that's not pleasant, but it's, you know, with a little wine and a cigarette, it's not too bad.
Yeah, and dating, too, a little, and yeah. Send flowers afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I thought I couldn't relate to the gynecologist exam until I had this thing done. Because I literally was in the stirrups, as they say, without a horse.
You told me about that, and I thought the only time I've ever been in stirrups is when I've ridden a horse.
Without horse, there is no saddle. In fact, I can honestly say I was bareback, if you will,
okay. In
those stirrups.
Sure.
Sliding around like a little young little peepee boy, just wow. And a little local anesthetic, and I'll have to say, and this is my point, I also had a colonoscopy about 3 weeks ago. Once again, everything fine, but once, you know, interesting. I don't have any orifices left to check anymore.
That's right. You've had ears,
yeah.
Eyes.
Ears.
Your nose. You haven't had anything up your nose.
No, I had a broken nose when I was 16.
Okay, but, you know, maybe we go up there and do some probing up there.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I had a sleep apnea sleep study where I had to go and get wired up and stay overnight and sleep, and that came out.
And I've done that. You know the nice thing about the sleep study is you get that great breakfast afterwards of a bowl of cold cereal and some orange juice.
Oh, I didn't even get that. They just
I got that. Yeah,
really? They just sent
I went
home.
To the Samaritan Sheridan, so it was a big deal.
They just sent me home. But no apnea. I mean, here's the thing. I've done all these procedures and all these tests, and thankfully, they're all negative.
So yeah, you're clear.
Even though I've got these little, like, nothing serious. And even today at the kidney doctor, he said, you know, we'll have to do an ultrasound. I'll take some blood. He said, since these other tests have all come out negative, you know, this is just something that we need to watch. And, you know, maybe every 6 months we'll take another picture and we'll find out. And so at least that's good. I forgot. So I took the CT scan. Back in May, they wanted to see the outside of my bladder initially. And while that was fine, and that was the key reason for the CT scan, but then the nurse says, well, there was nothing, just so you know, we got your results back, and there was nothing there to show that there would be any problem with your bladder. I'm like, great, I'm ready to hang up the phone. Until she says, however.
By the way.
Yeah, that's always a key word.
Right.
Especially when the doctor is involved. Who knew this, unless, you went to pre-med or you were good in biology. She said, you have a benign growth on your adrenal gland, which is on top of your kidney. That's okay. Where the adrenal gland is. This is not serious, and most of the time, the only way we discover this is when we take a CT scan for something else, and we see this.
Right, just something that happened by happenstance.
But it's there. Okay. And so the kidney doctor today, in fact, says, you know, we'll, when we take another scan, we'll just make sure it's the same size, and we'll check in 6 months. If it's the same size, then we don't have to worry about it. Okay, fine. I have calciated, I don't even know what the word is.
Or calcified?
Calcified stone in my gallbladder.
Okay.
No problem, doesn't matter, but it's there.
Actually, just so you know, I've had the gallbladder surgery, and that's a real easy one to get through.
Yeah, my wife did too. Yeah, it was.
It's not a big deal. So yeah. If you ever have to have that, it's a real easy.
Yeah, well,
thing.
He said, no, this is just this happens once with age.
Right.
How great that is! I love when they add that little that little caveat with
sure.
age of someone your age. Thanks, Doc. I've got calcified stone in my gallbladder. I've got a benign growth on my adrenal gland. My bladder's okay. Oh, and by the way, one of your kidneys is smaller than the other one.
Okay.
Now it's not like a peanut.
Yeah.
But it's visibly smaller. So to find out what that is and to find out if this adrenal gland on the kidney, this benign thing, is doing anything and perhaps maybe sending out some more hormones than needed because the adrenaline gland, I had to take a 24-hour urine collection.
Oh, yeah, with the plastic bucket?
Yeah, so they give you this jug. So I saw this jug, and all I know is there's sometimes I'm like secretariat.
You're going like crazy.
Yeah, I'm just standing there. I'm reading encyclopedias.
Filling the toilet.
Yeah, I mean, I got seven flushes, and I'm still going. So I look at this jug, and I'm saying, wait a minute, 24 hours of urine in that little jug? I'm like, I'm not trying to be gross here, but I think I could fill that thing right now without even trying.
Sure.
So she's like, really? No one's ever asked for a second jug.
So you're asking for a rain barrel.
Yeah, so I said, well, I think I, so she comes back with a second jug, you know. Well, you know, clearly I was a little, my expectations were a little grandiose. I didn't even fill half of the first one.
And you had to be embarrassed because you had to bring the other jug.
Oh, yeah, I had to bring that one back. So I said, sorry.
The whole collection, and you're I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I said, sorry, I was just thinking a little too much of myself here.
A little grandiose.
Yeah, so I've done that. And so the funny thing is I said, I got to tell you, so I'm up in the stirrups, and they give you a local anesthetic, so you're awake for this.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't see the dreaded apparatus. I can only imagine what this scope. And I asked the doctor. I'm like, you know, all right, we got to do this. Fine. And he's like, you know, it won't. He goes, it might just feel a little pressure. It's not going to be uncomfortable. You know, you're going to be. I'm like, yeah, I know. But just the thought of this is not, you know, something that you look forward to doing.
Right.
And I did say, though, well, how much tube? Because he goes in there with a scope. He's looking, you know. I'm like, how much do you need?
Oh, how much tubing?
Yeah.
You brought in that big spool like a garden hose, right?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to figure out, how much, you know, how far back is the bladder? Because I'm thinking, well, you know, and he goes, well, you know, it's, you know, and I mean, I didn't know what to think when I saw him pull out, you know, those new hoses now that you can roll them up in a little ball, and then when the water goes through,
ones, yeah.
Yeah, that's what he came in with.
Right.
He's like, hey, isn't this great? I've got 100 feet of coil here, but it only looks like 25. So, I mean, I'm laying there with my, you know, in the stirrups, bareback, you name it. You know, and at this point, you know, you lose all vanity and all embarrassment.
You just want to get this done.
Because what can you do? And I'll tell you, for having to do what this guy did, and going through the canal that this guy had to go through, before I even knew it, we were done.
Okay.
And I said, that was it? He goes, yep. He goes, everything looked good? No problem. I said, well, wait a minute. I said, he goes, it's already out. I'm like, it's out? I didn't even know it was in. and I said, well, wait a minute. I said, while we're here, and since I've already assumed the position.
Yeah, you're in the neighborhood.
I'm like, for what you're probably charging me, you might as well go back in and see if there's something else in there.
Yeah.
I mean, since that was So here's the thing that I'm saying, what this is all saying, between shots in the eye, shots in the ear, tubes in every orifice, the colonoscopy, I have to say, everybody dreads that, and you're supposed to go, you know, once you turn 50. Believe me, that was no big, even the prep wasn't that big of a deal, I didn't think.
Well, when I did it, the prep, I mean, first of all, the timing was perfect. You do that prep drink stuff,
yeah,
and they said about 20 minutes later you'll start going. I was like clockwork. And it was, not to get gross, but it was a mudslide.
Oh, really? See, well, you know what? What I did, though, I planned ahead. I realized what the end result could be.
So you curbed your eating a little bit?
Yeah, so for like 24 hours before that, I didn't hardly even eat.
Okay, that probably helped. I had it different. It was.
My doctor was very impressed. He says, wow, that is one clean colon.
You're really, really spiffy there.
Yeah, I mean, I had like a Swiffer in there.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, that was, in fact, Woody Allen told a great joke recently, and it was right before I was doing the colonoscopy, so I actually really appreciate it even more than I would have. So he said that someone asked him one time, what's death like?
Yeah.
And he said, well, you know when you get the shot for a colonoscopy and you just close your eyes and you're just kind of floating and you don't feel or hear anything and it's just this really peaceful feeling? And someone says, yeah, yeah. And he goes, well, that's what death is like. It's like the shot you get before your colonoscopy, just this feeling of serenity and peace and calm, and it's just dark and it's just nice. And he said, unfortunately, life is like the preparation for the colonoscopy.
Yeah, it's all the other stuff you got to go through.
But so even the colonoscopy, you know, boom, I opened my eyes and I was in the recovery room. Didn't even know what happened. So what I'm saying is, as much as this has been, this is a crazy time that we're living in, especially, you know, on the political front and a lot of other fronts, I must say, now, having had some real first person and up close connection to the medical community and all of its technologies and many of its tests and many of its treatments and cures.
Right.
I've got to say, this has really got to be an amazing time to live.
Oh, technology-wise, yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, for instance, whenever someone talks about a painful experience, not even something medical, they always say, oh, it was worse than a root canal. Well, I've had a root canal. Did you ever have a root canal?
Yep.
Yeah, what did you think of it?
Except for one little pinprick to put the first Novocaine in, I felt nothing.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. I mean, there's you do smell stuff.
Yeah, you smell your teeth grinded up. Yeah.
And you do see the flakes of your teeth flying in the air.
Yeah.
So that's a little weird. And you do sort of hear this kind of filing that's going on. So they actually, but a lot of doctors now even give you, like, you know, an iPod.
Right.
So you don't hear.
But I had that when I had some cavities filled. They put headphones on me and just blasted music. Yeah.
But in terms of the pain, nothing. The abscess I had, nothing. The shots in the ear, they numbed my ear. I couldn't see the needle because I'm not a lizard.
Right.
So my eyes can't go that far. So I never felt that. Although, Cole, the weird thing was I heard the injection of the liquid in my ear.
Oh, you could hear like the whoosh?
I heard the
ooh.
Yeah, that was weird. And the doctor didn't tell me that. Because what was happening was, you know, the needle was going past the inflamed part of my eardrum. And my hearing was fine behind that.
Yeah.
So that's why I heard that. And even this eye thing. You know, anything with the eye, as we know, we have a natural kind of reflex action to protect your eye and anything.
Sure, flinch, yeah.
Yeah, there's always the flinching and blinking. And so this is, you know, not something that you look forward to. But the first time I did it, you know, I was obviously nervous and afraid. But I've had 14 of these shots now.
Okay.
14. And I have to say, the whole process, when the doctor comes in to actually give me, I mean, they put some drops in my eye and it numbs the eye. And if the whole thing takes 5 seconds, that's long. And aside from a little pressure, that's it. And so, as I said, it's really amazing when you think about what people used to go through to be, quote unquote, treated or cured.
Right, to be tested and checked out and all those things. It's so different now.
As I said, the cystoscopy, where that scope was boldly going where no scope should really go.
Sure.
And yet, once again, I was like, what? That was it? You know, I was awake for that. So I have to say, as crazy as all, in fact, even today, you know, the kidney doctor says to me, don't worry, I'm going to get a picture of your kidneys. I need to get a closer picture, but it's just an ultrasound. I'm not going to be poking or prodding or sticking anything.
I'm not doing any more invasive stuff.
I'm not going to stick. And I say, well, I have nowhere to go. You know, in fact, but here's my addendum. So if that's not worse enough, while I'm at the going to my general practitioner, I have my own room now.
Sure, the Toronto suite.
In his office. I mean, I really have my name.
You get mail there.
Yeah, my name. They made me an embossed sign. I just go into the gym room.
Actually, you've been paying so much money out to insurance. Yeah. The doctors are naming their new Porsches after you.
Yeah, well, you know, well, not even that. I said, well, he said, well, you know, I won't be here next week. And I said, well, I'm probably paid for 7 of your vacations already.
Yeah, exactly. Enjoy Hawaii.
Yeah, thank you. Could you have a pina colada for me? Could you get me a lei? No pun intended. So I walk in there, and so while we're just talking about all this other stuff, and we have to do this, and this came back fine, I noticed this little kind of growth on the top of my hand, on my left hand.
You were just a factory of growth.
I swear. And now the funny thing is, I said, for the first, you know, half century of my life, I didn't even think about my health because it was never an issue. I don't even get colds.
Yeah.
Now I am a total hypochondriac. Anything that hurts, I think I have a tumor. I think I have multiple sclerosis.
Every sneeze, you think you got pneumonia.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking. So now I look at this growth, and this thing, it looked like it was a wart. And then it went away, so I'm like, no big deal. Then it came back, and then it had this, it started to get bigger, and it was in this round kind of shape, almost with a crater in the middle. And I'm like, so anything else? And I said, well, yeah, what the hell is this?
Right.
And he looks at this, and he pulls out the giant magnifying, that big round magnifying glass they have?
Like the kind of the bug, the entomologist in Silence of the Lambs have.
So he looks like that, and he goes, well, it could be a fungus, but I don't know how a fungus could get on your hand.
Yeah.
He goes, or it could be actually a very slow, common kind of skin cancer, which is not, you know, fatal or anything, but called basal cancer, I guess. He said,
sure.
So why don't you put some ointment on it, and if it doesn't go away, then we know it's not a fungus, and then we'll have to take it off. So, of course, I put the ointment on for a month. Nothing. So last week, I go into his office, and here we go again. And so he goes, okay, well, I'm going to have to cut this and take it off and and send it to the lab. And I have to make an eye cut, a long cut, because it's where it is. It's a weird spot, and you could pop the stitches if you make a fist, and yet, doot. So then he says to me, okay, are you okay about this? I mean, are you feeling weird about having to do this? And I said, I had a scope up my dong. Yeah. I didn't know the swing schwung until today.
Yeah.
I will use that from now on.
Yeah, it's a clinical term.
I'm like, look, from all the ridiculous tests that you've ordered over the last 2 months for me,
yeah,
you think I'm afraid of this?
Yeah, this is duck soup.
Yeah, I'm like, give me a break. And he goes, well, I have to give you an injection, of anesthesia. I said, I get shots in my eyeball.
Right. Hello. Are you listening?
Yeah. Would you just do this? But the funny thing is, I mean, I'm sitting there and I've got my hand on this thing and he's over there and he gives me the shots. I don't feel a thing, which is amazing again, because as I'm talking to this guy, I know he's cutting my hand open.
Right.
And yet I don't see anything. I don't feel anything. Although I did feel a little blood. It was weird. I felt cold blood
coming out,
going between my fingers,
because
that's where the thing is, right by my knuckle. But so that was weird. And of course, when we got done, I lifted up my hand, and there was like this blood on the, you know. And he's like, sorry if you had to see that. He goes, but it was really not a lot of blood. He goes, it just looks like a lot. I'm like, yeah, whatever. But here's the thing. So now he's over there, and he's got the sutures, and he's. I got 5 stitches on this, this little. This little wound here. In fact, the photo that I will give Kevin that he will post, that I will show you the bandage on my hand. I didn't want to show you the.
Yeah, don't show us what he pulled out.
Yeah, no, I won't show that, or at least these Frankenstein stitches that are on my hand, because it. Although they're like sky blue.
Okay.
They're like, when did that start?
It's a summer thing. It's a summer color.
Well, I wish he would have. I mean, it was Pride Month. He could have given me a yellow and a blue and a purple and a red. I mean, why not? So. Well, we start talking, because, I mean, I'm nervous. Whether it hurts or not, I'm still nervous, right? I mean, he's cutting my hand open.
Yeah.
So I'm starting to just, make a little small talk, and we start talking about vacations and DNA and all this stuff, and our heritages and stuff. And then I'm thinking to myself, should I really be talking to him now?
Yeah. Should you be distracting him while he's doing the procedure on your body?
Yeah, because he's making knots and he's cutting and he's like, see him dabbing and he's cutting, and I'm like, there's a part of me that wants to alleviate the stress of the situation. But then I'm saying, but maybe I shouldn't distract this guy.
Yeah, keep him on his game.
Yeah. And so I shut up for a while, but then he started talking to me. So I'm like, okay, he probably does this a million times a day, so. But then I actually saw the piece he took off, because he put it in a little jar. He has to send it, to see
if it's got to the biopsy,
see if it's got cancer in it. And so I was just like, so that was it, huh? He goes, yep, that's it. And it's so weird too, when you see a part of your body suddenly off your body.
What did it look like? I'm curious.
Well, it was just, he just took that layer, and here was the interesting thing. This thing got a little red,
Yeah.
This round little thing with this little crater in the middle, it got red. It was a little swollen around the sides with this crater in the middle, and the round swollen part was red. But here's the interesting thing. When it was in the jar, it wasn't red anymore because the blood wasn't going through it.
Okay, yeah, so that was cleared up. Okay.
Yeah, so it was just clear. In fact, he said, like before, he used a marker as to where he was going to cut, and he says, I have to do this now because when I put the anesthesia in, it swells a bit initially, and when it swells, the skin expands, and that lesion pretty much disappears.
Okay.
Because it's spread out.
So when he pulled it out, did it look like a piece of, cereal? What did it look like?
No, it was just skin.
Oh, so it was just skin.
It was just a topical thing. This wasn't like a tumor of any kind.
So it wasn't like a big, because I think I told you before, I had a soft thing, a growth removed from the side of my head, and it looked like a big bloody booger. It was pretty disgusting.
Oh, very nice.
Well, when they pulled it out, I wanted to, it was, again, local, and I wasn't put under.
They took something out of your head, and it was local?
Yeah, it's on the side of my head, my skin.
I don't care. It's your head.
I had a little soft lump on the side of my head.
Oh my God!
And they gave me Novocaine.
Oh.
And they just had me lay down.
Oh.
And she pulled it out and stitched it out. It was a female doctor. She did. And it came a little bit around my head there, and pull it out. And then at first I didn't want to look at it.
Oh.
And then once I got up from the and she sat up. I sat up and she told me they'd do the biopsy and all that. It turned out to be fine and all that. And she knew it would. And I said, well, let me look at it. I'm curious anyway.
Yeah,
and
no.
It looked like a big hunky bloody booger.
And that was in your head.
Yeah, side of my head. It was on my head, side of my head for years. It was a big soft spot.
Gee, listen to Mick. It's no big deal.
Well, I was used to it. It was kind of like a friend. I kind of miss it,
Well, I tell you, I always, when I go to the doctor, I ask questions.
Oh, sure.
And I want to know what's going on, and I want to, find out. And so even there, I was like, okay, you cut this thing off. Then I had a skin tag under my knee.
Okay.
Which is a weird spot. So I said, can you take this off too? So he goes, yeah, okay. So then he gives me another shot underneath the knee. So now I've got my leg. I mean, this was like a porno movie.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting on this chair. I've got my leg. I was actually impressed with how flexible I was.
Yeah, I didn't get a cramp.
Yeah, I mean, for someone who doesn't do descending dog, I was pretty impressed how I was able to lift my leg up near my my face. And so, of course, while my leg is up, akimbo, if you will,
right,
with the doctor, and if it's under my knee. So here's the picture. I'm on a chair. I'm leaning back with my leg, with my left leg up, in my hand holding up my leg. He is in between my legs with his back to the door.
Dear Penthouse.
Hunched, yeah. I never thought it would happen to me.
This story is entirely true.
Yeah. And, of course, his head is down.
Yeah.
Because he's looking, to where this thing is in my knee. So while my leg is up, the doctor is in my crotchal area with his head down. And at that moment, the nurse walks in.
Oh, of course,
and
yeah.
She goes, do you need any help? And I go, what are you going to bring, a camera?
What are you doing there?
Yeah, I'm like, everything was the same until the nurse came in. I'm like, all we need is like some bad 70s waka waka music
in
here.
Yeah, exactly. Get the grainy video going.
I'm like, no, I think we're okay. I'm not ready for three yet.
Yeah.
Let me just get used to this guy. We'll call you. We'll buzz you when I'm ready. So I'm like, what the hell is going on here? I'm getting stuff clipped off me left and right here. I'm like, what the heck's going on?
Well, you're. It sounds like all these growths. You're very fertile, and I'm kind of worried because I'm wondering if, like in that movie Alien, I wonder if you've got a creature growing inside you.
Well, here's the best part. So I go for my colonoscopy, right? And yeah. The guy says, the doctor said everything went very well, very clean, by the way. Nice job. Nice prep.
Okay.
But he said I did remove something I saw. He's very small. He says 2 millimeters, but I'm going to say, he goes, it's nothing, but you know, it was there. I took it off and I'm going to send it in, but you know, don't even worry about it. Well, it comes back. It was the equivalent of a skin tag in my colon.
So it was a piece of your colon.
Yeah. It was just kind of a skin that was kind of hanging.
Okay.
And he saw something hanging and he took it out. But basically it was kind of, I'm like, can you get a skin tag in your colon?
You are fertile, I'm telling you.
But I have to say, as we sit here in 2017, you know, we can talk about, I mean, everybody's talking about health care. And I'll tell you, after going through all these batteries of tests and all these doctor's appointments, the importance of health insurance is you can't even say it enough.
Yeah, exactly.
How important it is to have it, because many of the, like, for instance, even this this eye test, this eye shot, the doctor said, you know, many people wouldn't even be able to get this shot because it's expensive. And their insurance, if they didn't have the insurance.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know what the answer is to insurance. I'm not going to get involved in that. But all I know is you have to have insurance, folks. It's not something that you can worry about sometime later. I'm not that old, and I could see in the last 2 months, you know, I'm not 75 when, yeah, then you'd expect to be going to the doctor every 2 months.
Right.
And so please, you know, whether it's you going out on your own and buying it, or it's the government doing something, but yeah, this is an important thing, and it will. I don't care how old you are, and Kevin is over there snickering because he's in his 30s and he doesn't care about insurance.
Hey, it can happen to anybody, okay?
But I'll tell you, it will come. There will come a day when you do need it, and when you have it, you are saying, when you look at those bills and you see a $2,000 bill and you're paying $20
right
for $2,000, what if you didn't have that? So that's the other side of the coin. Which, as I said, I'm not going to pretend like I have any answers for that. But I do have to say, with all of these crazy maladies that I have had, it's been relatively painless, and so it's been scary on the face of it and the thought of it. But when they've actually done it, I've walked out and said, "What do you got for me?
Yeah.
What's next? Come on, I'll take whatever you got."
You know, again, that's the technology. In fact, it's funny you mention all that, Jim, because I saw a thing online the other day for people who are burn victims who get really bad skin burns.
Oh, like, that's got to be terrible.
Side. Yeah. There's some kind of laser in a gun. It literally looks like Mr. Freeze, you know.
Right,
from
Batman. Right.
It looks like a toy, and they showed what this thing does for, and it's a true invention. It's actually happening, treating burn victims that like restores their skin and their epidermis and all that. And I'm just like, again, like you're talking about, the pain-free technology and the things they do now is just incredible.
I have great respect, once again, for doctors and certainly for the technologies that we have. And I mean, the funny thing is, I understand that doctors are just being cautious, and that's their job. And a lot
of
times,
I want to check these things out.
Yeah, once you go to the doctor, you all of a sudden say, "Well, I went in for this, and they found this." Yeah, but you know what? Better to take a test and say it's not that, than not even know you have something.
Right.
So, as somebody who, as I said, I wasn't neglectful of my health. I was just in good health. But
yeah, you were sailing along with no problem.
Yeah, as somebody now who I've got a folder, and I've made a file, you know, on my computer now of all my the dates and my doctors and what has been done. And oh my gosh, The folder is busting. I have no place. I had to open a new folder because the other one had no more room to write on.
Right.
And I've got no more room for the cards. I was taping all the doctor's cards in the folder so I'd have the numbers. I have no room for the cards.
Well, it's good that you were organized.
Oh, yeah. That's the scary part. Very organized. So anyway, so that is what I was talking about. And I will let you know how my my latest malady with my hand, my biopsy, comes out. But for right now,
I think you have an alien creature growing inside you. You're going to be laying in bed one night with Jamie, and all of a sudden you're going to feel the pain, and it's going to happen.
Well, he says, well, he goes, oh, here's the best part. So I'm talking, we're talking while he's doing the suturing.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he goes, in the middle of a sentence, he goes, oof. And I go, wait, oof.
You don't want to hear ooh.
Yeah, yeah,
or,
you don't want to hear.
Wow, I've never seen that before.
Yeah, wow, what's that?
Well, that's like the old Seinfeld stand-up bit where he talks about you want to be with a doctor in the smallest room possible where everything can be real simple. You don't want to be in that operating theater with the mezzanine and
right.
the seats where the other doctors go, oh, wow, I don't know what's going on here, but I got to see this.
Yeah, I mean, so he goes, ooh, and I go, what's that? He goes, oh, well, I don't like the way that that knot just was made. I'll have to take it out. I have to start over. I'm like, what is this? It's like when you make a bad knot when you're tying your shoe.
Right. Yeah, you got to flip this around.
Well, not only that, but you always have to then, like, you know, dig into that knot.
Yeah.
Because you had it nice and tight. He goes, yeah, I'll have to take that out. I'm like, oh, geez, here we go.
You know what? Don't talk to him next time.
And then he goes, well, you know, you're going to have a scar there. And I said, you know, look, my days of being a hand model.
Yeah.
My dreams of being a hand model are over.
Right.
So don't worry about it. I said, I've got enough scars. I felt like I was in Jaws. I'm like, well, look at the one I got over here, Doc. You know, he goes, oh, you seem to, like I said, in fact, I said, I had one not far from there from an old football injury. And he goes, oh, he said, you look like you heal pretty well. I'm like, whatever. And then I'm looking at this thing when I took the bandage off a day after he had did it, and after he had done it, I was like, oh, boy, those, I don't care what you say, it still looks weird. Because your skin is being sewed together.
Right, exactly. Like you got a pants that needs stitching.
Yeah. So I've got a nice. I was very impressed. I went to the Walgreens, ding ding ding, and I bought this nice gauze that is self sticky.
Okay.
No need for
tape or anything.
For tape, it's a wrap that it sticks to itself. So I'm able to put a nice little wrap on it every day, and so it seems to be healing pretty well. And I got to go next week to have the stitches taken out. So once again, what could be or could have been a horrible situation turned out to be nothing. So,
well, I think with all this experience you've had, Jim, it's almost like you could be a third-year resident at the Mayo Clinic with all this experience.
Oh, I know. My goodness. I mean, I know what a cystoscopy is, and I could say it without stumbling.
They're going to give you a white coat, a little tag.
Oh, I could easily, you know, be like what was that movie, Catch Me If You Can?
Yeah.
Oh, I could walk right into any urologist's office right now and say, so, Mr. Peterson, what do you need?
I can take care of your schwing schwang.
There we go. That's the key. The key word today is schwing schwang. So,
it's a clinical term. Look it up. Everybody uses it. It's what the doctors use.
Well, thank you for that contribution. And once again, I'm glad to share my medical maladies with you. And as I said at the top of the podcast, we will be meeting at the Portillo's on North Avenue for our exchange of pop to beat the pop tax.
2 a.m. I'll be there.
All right. Thank you, Mixter. Mick Kaler joining us. Thanks a lot, Mick. And we're back here at Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. And we're going to switch some gears and go right into that pop culture club. Emily Arminetti.
Hey, Jim.
How you doing?
I mean, I was okay until I caught the end of that last segment, and now I feel like, you know those sick bags on the airlines? I feel like I need those.
Well, you didn't hear the first part. I was in some stirrups.
Oh, God.
I know how you guys feel. I was bareback in the stirrups.
Yeah. Check your dignity at the door.
Oh, buddy. Yeah, there is no dignity there. And especially where he stuck that scope, no scope was ever meant to go.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I've got no more orifices. Both. I've got I've got no more orifices to go left. Everything has been probed. Front, back, top, bottom, you name it. Side. Let's talk about more. Let's talk about more fun things. Let's talk about some fun things like O.J. Simpson being released from prison.
Right.
Oh. You know,
the juice is loose.
I don't. Well, he's not loose yet.
Not yet, but he will be soon.
I'm hoping that between now and October, he punches a warden. And he gets another 10 years.
It sounds like he's been on pretty good behavior while he's been there. So I think that's part of the problem.
Well, here's the thing. So, you know, I don't know. When I saw this O.J. Simpson thing, I was like, you know, this is the national scab that we just constantly pick at.
Yeah.
And here we're picking at it again. And so here's my question to you as a pop culture and aficionado, even though you don't watch Game of Thrones, shame. So, you know, the O.J. Simpson thing really was one of the major and one of the most unique stories that this country's ever had, because it mixed in so many different issues, not only from a pop culture standpoint, but obviously race relations and the legal community. I mean, there were so many things at work in that one case, which was just amazing. But I'm thinking now, it's been over 20 years, and what do you think is going to happen when he is released in October? How do you think we are going as a community or as a culture and as the media? What do you think is going to happen? Is OJ going to be on with Megan Fox? Is he going to bring Barbara Walters out of retirement? Or, you know, is Ryan Seacrest going to give him a reality show on E? Or are we just going to shun him? What do you think is going to happen?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm sure OJ being OJ, he's going to try to capitalize off of this. You know, he's probably already trying to shop that first interview. As you mentioned, a reality show, that would not shock me at all. A book, you name it. But I honestly, I don't think he'll get anywhere with it. Other than, yes, I've seen that Larry King would like to do the first interview. I'm sure he's dying to get it. But and I think maybe Larry King could kind of pull it off without making it seem like he's giving a platform to someone who many people in this country believe murdered two people. But, you know, I feel like OJ, it's just, I don't think people want to hear from him. And I don't think they want him to be able to profit off this in any way or have any kind of voice. So I feel like anyone who kind of gives him a platform might be digging their own grave. I don't know.
Well, I hope that's the case. I hope you are right, because to me, the greatest punishment that this guy can have, and you nailed it on the head, knowing OJ. I mean, that's always the preface. Knowing OJ and his need for attention, his need for the spotlight, and his arrogance, regardless of what kind of prisoner he's been. I mean, I saw some of the tape in front of the parole board, and he looked very, you know, conciliatory and very calm, but he was still had that OJ swagger, and he still had that OJ smile, and you could still see he was flashing that charisma to kind of get his way with the parole board, and it was unanimous. And let's be honest, I mean, you know, I think he did get a real stiff sentence for what he did this time, you know, trying to get his memorabilia back, and there's no doubt.
Right.
And I think there was some kind of payback for him being acquitted of allegedly.
Well, the judge who handed him that sentence made it a point to say, I want everyone to understand that this is not any kind of retribution for anything else that's happened.
Oh, I know, but it's at the same time, it was. He could say all he wants, but OJ got 10 years for basically, stealing.
It was a female judge.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the thing, you know. I mean, once again, you know, and as far as OJ is concerned, don't forget, you know, the killer is still out there.
Well,
and he is going to dedicate his life to finding him.
Well, now that he's out of prison, I think he'll be able to finally get cracking on that.
Well, he'll be able to find him now because I'm sure in the last 10 years of prison, he hasn't been able to see a look into a mirror. But once he's free, he can look back into a mirror and he'll find the killer immediately.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting because on one hand, yeah, I do think people are, they just, they kind of, it's just all very distasteful. Anything OJ does is sort of very just, he needs to kind of go away and just.
Do you think he can?
He's quiet, like, however, on the flip side, it is interesting that in the last couple of years, this story has come back into, I mean, not that it ever really went away, but I mean, there were a couple of like points of interest. You know, I mean, Ryan Murphy, who's one of the hottest producers in Hollywood today, and pretty much half of the programming on FX is like, you know, he's producing.
Right.
But, you know, he's kicked off this true crime anthology series with the focus on the OJ case, People versus OJ Simpson, and that was very well received.
Oh my gosh, it won a ton of Emmy Awards. I mean, yeah, that was the hit of the season.
Right, and there were a lot of people involved in that. And so, you know, so then there's that. So that kind of makes me wonder, well, okay, that's not giving OJ a voice, but, you know, it shows that there is still this fascination in this case. And then there was also that documentary, OJ Made in America. That actually won the Oscar for Best Documentary Feature.
That was a very good.
Did you watch it?
Yeah,
it
I saw really that. Good. I saw that. It was very good. Very fairly, you know, paced in terms of showing, you know, didn't really have an overt, you know, opinion on it. So they did give you the facts, but some of the facts were just, you know, when you're done, some of the facts were just impossible to overlook.
Oh, sure.
You know, I mean, what's interesting from my standpoint, when you think about it, you know, that was 94, 95, 96. There's a whole generation now of 20-year-olds who weren't even alive.
Right.
So while there's a good portion of the world here who still remembers all that chaos and all that craziness that was going on surrounding the court case and the Bronco and the whole thing, there also is a generation of young adults that's stuff in a history book,
right?
You know, so I wonder, you know, certainly there's a fascination, but you know, we are so driven by the younger kind of interests of the population of younger people that my hope is that, to your point, yes, there's always going to be an interest and a fascination, but gosh, I hope that, I don't know why I would even think this, because there is no such thing as restraint in our media today, but gosh, it would be great if Larry King did not come out of retirement, or that Barbara Walters did not come out of retirement, or that 60 Minutes or Good Morning America or Matt Lauer or Megan Fox or her whoever did not give him the big interview, and that he does not get the big book from Simon and Schuster, and that, you know, he's just lucky to be out and he goes to Florida and just goes away, because that would be the greatest punishment for him, because you do know that he loves that limelight, and he, to your point, the juice is loose, he loves it,
But I also think his life, I think somewhere he knows. I mean, it seems like he sort of doesn't have a whole lot of self-awareness, but I do think somewhere in him, he knows, like, his life was never going to be the way that it was before the murders, you know, where he was this celebrated guy and he was part of this very affluent community and, you know, he'd go golfing all the time with his golf buddies. And, like, you know, even after he was acquitted of the crime, that community, as we saw, you know, if for anyone who watched the documentary Made in America, you know, he was pretty much shunned. People turned their backs on him. And, you know, because they really believe that he murdered these two people. And, you know, so I think he was, even before he went to prison, like actual prison, he was sort of living in like a metaphorical prison, you know, where he, I mean, of course, I'm sure he'll be happy to be free and not actually be living in a cell, but, you know, he can't really, I mean, everywhere he goes, I'm sure there are people who, you know, still, you know, make him feel like, you know, you committed this crime. So, and I'm sure that's something that he, I mean, it's something he doesn't want to well, obviously, he doesn't have to admit to it. He's been acquitted of the crime. But, you know, it's something he's got to live with. He's still got to live with that everywhere he goes. So,
yeah, well, I mean, the one thing, too, that really, in retrospect now from a historical thing that I don't think should be lost is, you know, we've got so many problems today, you know, with race relations and certainly with the police and the African-American community and Black Lives Matters and all these confrontations between, you know, the police and, you know, and black, you know, crime and these stops and, you know, things like that. And it was so strange that when you think about it, in that same period, you had both the Rodney King incident when he was beaten by the California police.
Yeah.
And then you had OJ who wasn't necessarily beaten. And if you watch those documentaries or even if you watch the, you know, the drama, how do you even say that word?
The dramatization
of the story. The California police really were giving him the benefit of the doubt at the beginning. So OJ was certainly not, you know, being persecuted initially. The police were actually bending backwards because of his celebrity. But the OJ Simpson thing, even more than I would say the Rodney King thing, and this is really saying something, really showed the division in our country about race. And it was really the first time since the civil rights movement in the 60s where the still deep wounds and the still deep divides between the black and white in this country were really on parade. I mean, there were some people who were white who just didn't care whether OJ he was guilty, in their same way with all the evidence there were some black people who didn't care. They wanted OJ to go free, and each side could not understand how the other could think the way they did. And that's where we're at even today.
Right. I mean, yeah, it certainly, you know, the timing of the trial and the fact that it was kind of on the heels of this, you know, of the 1992 riots, as you mentioned. I mean, it really did kind of shine a light on that larger issue of racial tension, particularly in Los Angeles at that time. But I think also when it came to the OJ trial, I mean, you know, look, the LAPD, you know, in the aftermath of Rodney King and the LA riots, they didn't have a whole lot of credibility. You know, and then you go into this trial, and then, you know, I mean, this is the other side of the coin. It's like, on one hand, you look at, you know, anyone who was around during that time, and, you know, this was like a televised, remember, this was on, you know, on TV every day. This was like a televised event, the trial. And you're watching, and you're seeing all this forensic evidence being presented, and there was a whole, I mean, this is when the whole world kind of became up on DNA evidence, right?
Oh, definitely.
Because they were walking the jury through this every day to try to help them understand this trail of evidence that had been left behind and which all pointed back to OJ. And you know, you're watching this every day and you're thinking to yourself, I don't understand, like, what more do they need in order to convict this guy?
Right.
But then on the flip side of it, you know, I mean, his defense team was smart. I mean, they broke a lot of holes in that. You know, they cast a lot of doubt on the LAPD. They had the Mark Furman tape. They had, you know, just, they had evidence of, you know, the crime scene, like, not that it was tampered with, but it was very, you know, people were not taking great care in collecting evidence in a way that wouldn't taint the crime scene. And so it does poke holes. And so, yes, the racial tension, I think, around the trial and in this country at that time created a scenario where, you know, some people just couldn't see the other side at all. But there were a lot of elements of that case that I think in a courtroom, if you analyze it, you kind of say to yourself, you know what? They created reasonable doubt.
Yeah, well, like I said,
it's hard to imagine that happening, but really when you think back and you cast your mind back to the actual, like, you know, when the case is happening, and especially some of those Johnny Cochran moments, you know, because he had a few real kind of like gotcha moments with the prosecution, and the prosecution, you know, they also left themselves vulnerable. And so all of that, like, yes, race relations probably played a role, but at the same time, we can't forget all of that other stuff that was actually happening in the courtroom.
Oh no, there's no doubt. There's no doubt that I mean, you know, that was the dream team, the legal dream team, and they saw the vulnerabilities and they saw the realities that the prosecution did not see in terms of the way people would be thinking and touching on nerves and hot topics and emotional feelings. Once again, I don't think there's any doubt as to what happened there. What I feel bad about this now going forward, once again, I've already seen them, is, as I talked about at the beginning, this kind of national scab that we're picking at against. And what I really felt sorry for now is that once again, with OJ coming out, then now here were the Goldman family again.
Right.
You know, and the father and the sister who were so, were so present and were so angry and so aggressive, in their public statements about OJ. And, you know, he did lose that civil suit. And so to your point about, these books and these TV shows and stuff, you know, there's a part of that, too, that I don't know if OJ, if he does those, I don't think he would even get any money from them.
No.
Because I think any money he makes, I know he gets a pension from football, that I think he will keep, but anything he would possibly make would have to go, because he lost a $32 million settlement to the Goldmans.
Right. And you're right. I don't think they can touch his pension, and I believe that he moved to Florida because something in the state of Florida that your home cannot be taken away from you, even.
But I just felt sorry for the Goldmans because, once again, you know, this is this dredges this up again. And while he's been in prison, and even though he didn't go to prison for those murders, at least there was some kind of, quasi justice. And at least he did lose his freedom for a while. And so he did not go completely unpunished. So hopefully, like you're saying, my hope is that initially there's going to be the curiosity and they are going to go there, and hopefully OJ's arrogance in those interviews will piss people off again to say, okay, OJ, you had your say, now go away, we don't want to hear about you anymore, go spend time with your kids, be a father, and just fade away into obscurity, because we don't really need you or that, and all that case, as I said before, what that case went to represent in terms of legal and cultural and race things. We don't need all that dredged up again, especially right now. We've got enough of that going on, and we don't need OJ to get back into the pot and stir that. And so I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that there will be some reaction and some shunning, and like you said, he'll probably get some initial attention. But I hope after that, I just hope OJ goes away.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be a show. So when is he getting out? In October, right?
Sometime in October, yeah. So
yeah, well.
We'll see.
We'll see. I don't know, though. I think he never really, OJ never, his mark has been made. You know, I think even for people who weren't around during the trial, the murders and the trial and all of that, they probably have no idea even the influence that whole thing had on popular culture in America.
Oh, I know.
Because when you really think about it, like the 24-hour news ticker.
Oh, right.
You know, the tabloid culture.
All of that started.
Traced back to OJ,
I mean, that's
even televised trial.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, even the phenomenon of people being famous for no reason. You know, like that kind of started with like the people who were called as witnesses in that case, you know, and kind of were these weird characters who were kind of caught up in the middle of this
storm. And then how ironic is it that the weird people who are famous for being famous in today's society are the Kardashians, and Robert Kardashian was a part of the OJ thing.
Yes, I mean, exactly. We have OJ to thank for the Kardashians.
I know.
So, you know, but yeah, I mean,
really, man,
his presence will somehow, even in a subtle way, always be there.
Yeah. Well, I have, and I also have a selfish reason. as much as I've just said how much I wish OJ would go away and whatever prestige or he may have in our culture would go away, I do have some one selfish reason that I may have to hold out and be called a hypocrite, and we'll see. I was just going, thankfully my mom was a pack rat, and I found all of my baseball cards and hockey cards and football cards when I was a little kid from back in the 70s. I've got an O.J. Simpson card.
I knew it. I knew you were going to say that.
So I'm holding on to that one.
Right. I'm surprised it's not autographed.
Yeah, no, I didn't get the autograph, but I'm holding on to that one. So we'll see. So maybe O.J., for a while, for a little moment there, I can maybe cash in on. I'll just be another one of those barnacle bloodsuckers and cash in on the O.J. thing.
Right.
So real quick before I say goodbye, how's Jimmy One Sox doing?
He's great.
Excellent.
But he asked me this week, did you talk about me after the podcast posted? And I said, oh, the podcast posted. But we're out of town right now, so we didn't go to violin as usual. So we weren't in the car with Dave. And he said to me, did you talk about me? So I played the beginning for him.
Oh, there you go.
Because we did actually talk about him a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. So, well, say.
Like I said, he's spoiled now. He thinks every week he's going to come up and out. Yeah.
And the fact is, he does. Because I'm.
You know what? He is our number one fan.
Right. And now I'm his number one fan.
Right.
So. Well, thank you. Hopefully OJ will come and go. We'll see what happens. But you will come back next week, and it's always fun talking to you, Emily, and we will talk again to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jim.
Okay, take care. And that is episode 64 of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted, and all 63 previous episodes are right there at WGN.com on my landing page. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. I hope you had a good time. I certainly did. This is Captain Podtastic from the end of the web to your screen.